Longhorn Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the foot kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Welcome back to another episode of the Fire Tom Herman Podcast, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. And honestly, let's just get this over with. I'm Josh, he's Noah, and dude, holy shit, was that game a fucking beating this past weekend.
Yeah, it was. It ruined an otherwise great day. Like, I went to the game, because I live in Fort Worth, with some friends, and it was a great day. Like, it's beautiful weather. We had, like, pretty good seats and a view. It was so nice outside.
And it just completely ruined it.
Yes, we had been, exactly, we're just coming off this, like, great mood of watching the Sooners lose to Kansas State. Like, it was, the day had so much potential. That's all I'm going to say.
Especially, like, I was watching that Kansas State game. I tuned in probably about midway through the first quarter. But it was one of those ones where watching it, even though OU had the lead at the time, it was pretty obvious that Kansas State was getting under their skin and getting to them. And just the entire time you were watching, it just felt like you were waiting for the inevitable to happen. And Kansas State was able to pull it off, not without some sweat there at the end. Thought for sure that they were going to blow it, and it was just going to be a really brutal start to the day. But I'm glad they held on, so it wasn't like the entire weekend was a complete just kick to the dick.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was, they went on a run from, like, the second quarter to the end of the fourth, where it was, like, 40-6 or 44-10 or something outscoring OU. That's pretty remarkable and a little bit scary.
Yeah, that's not easy to do.
We at least get them at home, though, right? I'm pretty sure we don't have to go to Manhattan.
No, they are coming to us. Okay. They will be our game after this bye week. I guess we'll try and deal with this game that was not a whole lot of fun. We'll talk, I guess, first about the few things that did go well. And I think there were some Texas players who showed out and actually did have a pretty good game, despite the final result.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we can just kind of do a, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly sort of thing for the review. And then I think later on we're going to talk about just some general expectations that we had at the beginning of the season and kind of reviewing those.
And it's hard not to, just with how this game went. It overall, I think for a lot of Texas fans, even despite the issues we had against Oklahoma and the cracks we showed against Kansas, I think actually losing this game was a big sort of come-to-Jesus moment, sort of a realization that we aren't as close as we thought we were to start this year. So it's hard to talk about this game and the disappointment of this game without really delving into the expectations in the preseason.
Yeah. So anyways, to this game specifically, the good, we got to start with Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay, I think, because those guys had themselves a game. I'm trying to pull up the exact stats here, but I know that those two combined for, like, almost all of our receiving yards. Yeah. So the two of them, 15 catches, 284 yards, a touchdown for Duvernay. And then the rest of the team had 7 catches for, 47 yards and a touchdown, that swing pass to Ingram. So, I mean, it kind of was a two-man show on offense, and that's reflected in the fact that Sam went 22 of 48 in terms of his, like, completion percentage there.
Yeah, it was, I mean, those guys did their best with what they had, but it felt like there were a lot of areas almost where we were playing with our, like, one hand tied behind our back, and I think they brought it up during the game. I believe the announcers even brought up just the lack of Brennan Eagles. There were reports during the week about him being possibly suspended, and it appears, even though it was never formally announced, it appears that's what the case was, because he never took a snap on the field. But we just lacked that sort of athleticism, that speed, and that sort of threat that he poses as a receiver from the X position. So it was not... It basically came down to, it was Devin Duvernay or Colin Johnson or basically nobody for Sam to throw to. And I would credit part of that to just the absence of Brennan Eagles in the game.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I don't want to get too much into, like, the team stuff here, but there has to be something more to it, because you don't sit a guy for an entire game if he misses a practice for, like, legitimate personal reasons. So I think there's something there, but at the end of the day, he wasn't on the field and nobody else could produce. I mean, Jake Smith had the one like bomb that he dropped that was probably a touchdown. And just our receiving core as a whole.
Not that it was a perfect throw, but it was one that he definitely could have adjusted to.
Yeah, I think you gotta catch that if it's in your hands. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. We've kind of discussed on the show before about how we would do it to get more of our receiving threats on the field, like putting Duvernay at the Z and Jake Smith at the in the slot. You know, even though Duvernay is amazing there, I think Smith is good there, like drops aside. But I think it's obvious whenever we don't have Brennan Eagles and Colin Johnson on the field at the same time, because one of those fields just goes like completely silent for the game, whether it's Malcolm Epps or it's John Burt. Even though Burt had 3 for 21 in this game, it's just the lack of that impact player is like really obvious.
I mean, you've got two guys who I think really just overall lack that athleticism to take on those roles. Malcolm Epps seems like a guy who, I mean, admittedly, he is a redshirt freshman, so he's got a lot of growing to do into the position. So you can sort of understand why he's not there yet, but at the same time, you can't understand why the coaching staff insists on treating him like he is already there. And then you have a guy like John Burt, for all his track speed, all his hurdles, accolades from the track team, really isn't that physical receiver either. He's not the guy who's going to go up for the jump ball, and that's part of what makes Brennan Eagles so dangerous, is he has that track speed and he still has that size and that athleticism to go up and get the ball like he's Colin Johnson, which was, again, sorely lacking when you have John Burt out there instead.
Yeah, and I think there's also something beyond the like the physical and all the stuff that is within the receiver's control. It almost feels like Sam just has an entirely different chemistry with Duvernay, Johnson, Eagles, and Smith compared to like everybody else at the wide receiver position. I don't know if it's just me that sees that, but like Sam just seems off this year when not throwing to those guys. Like, he's had a couple interceptions that have just looked like miscommunication, and some of that is on Sam, you know, but some of it is just he and the receivers don't seem to really be clicking outside of a couple of those guys.
Yeah, and I think that was something we saw to a certain degree even last year. I mean, last year wasn't even the full starting lineup for receivers that he had a rapport with. It was basically he had Colin Johnson, he obviously had Lil Jordan Humphrey, and the number three was probably Andrew Beck, despite the limitations there. I complained about it several times last season and over the offseason about how important it would be for him to get on the same page with Devin Duvernay for how many times he just missed him. So I think Sam has expanded in that department. He has found more rapport with more of his receivers more consistently. But it is still limited to, that starting lineup for the receivers. You get into those depth positions with guys like John Burt, especially with guys like John Burt, when he is a guy who is a multi-sport athlete, focused on track during the offseason a lot. So he's just not there for a lot of those sessions where receivers and quarterbacks gain a lot of that chemistry, where it's pitching and catching over the summer and during the spring when there's really not the same level of organized team activity that you have during the season. So guys who aren't around just fall so far behind. And I know this staff wants to give John Burt credit for sticking around, for taking a red shirt as a senior last year, redshirting so that he could come back and hopefully have an impact this year. But it's just one of those things where it feels like they're trying to do the right thing for John Burt at the expense of really the effectiveness of the offense. And it might be a culture thing. John Burt might be one of those guys in the locker room who is great for culture. And we've seen this staff is not willing to trade off talent for culture. If you are causing problems, if you are missing practices, if you are failing drug tests, you are not on the field with this staff. We saw it with Holton Hill for drug tests. We saw it with Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis famously in that Oklahoma State game in 2018, that we were effectively willing to lose the game because those guys missed a practice. And it came back to bite us again in this game with Brennan Eagles being out for whatever reason, he missed the practice four. But I agree with you. You're right. If it's a personal reason, it's got to be something much more serious, because if it was a legitimate personal thing, I doubt the coaching staff would have felt it necessary to punish him for missing if it was something where it was family related or he was sick or whatever it might have been. That hammer came down pretty hard. So it's got to be something related to culture. Maybe it was, maybe he skipped for his own reasons and they just tried to cover for him and then handled it internally, whatever. But it's hard to watch little things like that, missing a practice or being late to a practice or whatever, and just seeing the staff be willing to throw away a significant chunk of game time when our quarterback is still not really fully comfortable with those backups.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Can I hit you with just a really quick random buy-sell question before we move on?
Sure.
Okay. Brew McCoy was the biggest loss we had this offseason. Buy or sell? I guess we shouldn't really compare him to like the graduating seniors or guys that went pro, but I should say he was an underestimated loss. We greatly underestimated.
Given the athleticism that Brew has, just being that he was a five-star guy, and the amount of reps he took as part of our team for all of spring practice, I don't know that I would say that he alone was the biggest loss, but the impact that he had by being here for those 15 practices and then not being involved at all, I could see that argument. I could buy that Brew McCoy was effectively the impact that he left created the biggest problem with our offense. His departure created a lot of problems that wouldn't have been there even if he had just never showed up on campus at all.
Yeah, and I mean, now the guy, he would have been the backup X. So all those minutes that we see Malcolm Epps out there would have been Brew McCoy. And I mean, the book is still to be written on what Brew McCoy is as a collegiate player, but I mean, he was already the backup in the spring, so he must have been doing something right. But yeah, that just kind of hit me the other day that, whoa, like imagine this offense if we had had like Brew out there.
Yeah.
But anyways, we can take it back to the TCU game. The other good thing I had was Malcolm Roach, because he had himself a pretty nice game.
Yeah, I think that's representative of sort of a lot of the things that, despite the issues with the pass rush, I think it's not an issue necessarily with solely our defensive line, because you have guys like Malcolm Roach who had a good game. You have guys like Keyonde Coburn who just basically exists as just a massive problem for opposing offensive lines, but continuously seem to fail to convert on that, despite the fact that our defensive line is actually playing at least at a reasonably good level. They're not elite. Keyonde Coburn has a lot of growing to do, but he is a redshirt freshman. That's to be expected. And then there are just some limitations to having Malcolm Roach, having Taquan Graham out there. But for what we've got, we actually get pretty solid to pretty good defensive line play. And you saw that again out of Malcolm Roach in this game. But it just sort of makes it all the more frustrating when you see the rest of the problems that the defense has, that we're not able to take a pretty good unit and pair them with other units of similar quality.
Yeah, and I think that for me, it's also frustrating just within the defensive line itself, because I think that you see performances like this where Roach is getting pressure, or Coburn has had a couple of good games where like he's been able to show the ability to get penetration. And I mean, even Taquan Graham and guys like Marquez Bimage have at least flashed. But then you see them out there like on lots of snaps where the ball gets snapped and they don't actually attempt to rush the passer. And I don't know if that's like a scheme thing. Like they know that, oh, we have seven guys blitzing from 15 yards deep, so our job is to contain the quarterback. Because, I mean, that makes sense. Like, sometimes you do that, especially since we played mobile quarterbacks, where you just tell defensive linemen, like, just don't let him outside you or stay in this area, you know, especially if you're not going to be leaving a spy on the quarterback. But, yeah, it's weird that we decide that we need to be blitzing six-plus guys so often, whenever I think that if our defensive line was just more consistent, it would be okay to, you know, only send four. At least is like the base philosophy for our defense.
Yeah, especially when you have a guy like Joseph Osai, if we would just be able to leave him as a B backer, that would drastically change our pass rush situation. It would allow those three guys that we have in Coburn, in Roach, and in Graham to continue doing what they're doing while having a guy who is consistently a weapon coming off the edge. You're just not going to get that same pressure from Taequann Graham if he is your blitzer, and trying to bring guys like Overshown and Foster, who do have a nose for the quarterback, but they're coming from, like you said, 10, 15 yards deep, so it takes so long for them to actually get the chance to get to the quarterback that even if they get through, it's been 4 seconds of trying to cover these guys, cover wide receivers down the field, and the quarterback's able to get rid of the ball before they're ever really a threat.
Yeah. You know, let's shelve this talk about scheme for a little bit till we get to those kind of like overarching points about the defense for the season. But do you got anything else for the good here for TCU?
I mean, I guess just as a little thing, it was nice to see a little bit of aggressiveness with special teams, even though we paid the price for it. Ryan Bouchefsky on that fake punt, managing to, what was it, break his shoulder or something?
Oh my God. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
I mean, that was a nice little run, but probably need to coach him up on getting out of bounds and not getting hit, I think, because he was a good 2 or 3 yards past the first down marker and then took a shot. I think it's basically you need to coach that guy to aim for the pylon or whatever and just one step past it and straight out of bounds. Do not get yourself hit. Though, when Chris Nagar came in, after Bouchefsky had been taken off the field, I thought Nagar actually had a surprisingly decent punt for the fact that I'd never seen him punt before.
Yeah, I mean, I'll completely be honest. Since I was in the stadium, I didn't actually realize that Bouchefsky wasn't back in the game. I don't think until after the punt had happened. And it was fine. He was all right. It definitely wasn't an issue, but stands to be seen how that's going to work going forward. I did think it was interesting, though, just the call to go for the fake punt, because Herman is usually like pretty upfront about just going for it. But that was like one of two special teams calls that I thought was really interesting. The other being to kick a field goal on fourth and short in the red zone early on with Dicker. And that's kind of like...
Yeah, that was one of those things I think kind of set the tone the opposite of what our mantra had been all season, of just being aggressive and going to punch it in, because it was only 2 or 3 yards to the end zone. So it was honestly, pretty shocking to see us settle for the points when it's just been what we do. We get into the red zone and we punch it into the end zone.
Yeah, or we die
basically
trying.
No matter what it takes. Yeah.
And we've been good. Like, okay, so this is something we had for the ugly, but our red zone offense was so bad when for a lot of the season it's been a strength. You know, like the first half of the season, the only two times we didn't score a touchdown in red zone possessions were the two against LSU, which, I mean, that still breaks my heart, but like, that's a strength of your offense if you're 16 of 18 on red zone trips turning into touchdowns. And then this game, for some reason, we just don't do it. And then those 4 points or the 3 points on the chip shot that Dicker missed, you know, if you get all those, suddenly it's a three-point field goal, you know? Sorry, it's a three-point game whenever you get the ball back after your TCU scores. So it's – I don't know why they decided to change things, but I didn't like it. As much flack as Herman has gotten from fans this year about going for it on fourth downs and some of the play calls, I think it's still the right decision, and I think that this game really shows why. And in a way, it kind of supports Herman in my mind to just keep on going for it in those situations.
Yeah, and he brought up during the Big 12 coaches teleconference that they do every week, the reason that we decided to go for it or kick the field goal instead of going for it was because of the opponents that we were up against. Or he said the kids that we were playing. It's hard to tell if he meant like in regard to the injuries that we were dealing with or the defense we were playing against. But it just sort of gave me that impression, right? That just sold me more on it's not even that TCU had proven that they were going to shut us down in the red zone. And it wasn't even that our guys had proven that they weren't going to be able to execute in the red zone. This was the very first drive, basically, that we had. And we set the tone early saying, you know, we're going to accept the points and we're not going to stick to our mentality of being the aggressors in these situations. And I think overall, that was, to a certain degree, mentally damaging for this offense.
Yep. All right, moving on through the rest of the ugly here. I hate to do this because I still love this guy and I always will, but Sam Ehlinger, for me, goes in the ugly category.
Yeah, this was by far the worst game that he's played, probably even since his freshman year overall. I made the joke during the game that it had taken approximately 13 and a half months for Sam Ehlinger, this version of Sam Ehlinger, to make it from the D.C. area to Fort Worth. But honestly, I think this was far worse than anything he did against Maryland. Those two exactly opposite of clutch interceptions late in the game against Maryland were not helpful. But, I mean, this was consistently all game not being able to execute. And it was a variety of different reasons. Herman tried to throw some of the receivers under the bus, I think, during the conference and during the teleconference, and not really putting too much of it on Sam. He only really put one of them on Sam trying to do too much, and that was the one, basically the last one, I think, where he tries to throw to, or force a ball to John Burt that he should have just thrown away because Burt's already
going to be trying to toe tap it. So there was, you have to force that ball. You know, if you don't, you lose, and if you do, you lose. But yeah, I think that this was even worse than the Maryland game because, I mean, so the thing about the Maryland game is the game was fine outside of those two interceptions, and one of them he was hit as he was throwing because Trey Watson kind of got blown up on his block, and the other one is either, I think it was 3rd and 10, it might have been 4th and 10, and he forced it downfield to Humphrey. So I worst game since his freshman year, and this team isn't going to win football games if Sam is playing like he did as a freshman. We didn't even win games when he was a freshman. You know?
Yeah.
And that was with an elite defense.
This is that reminder of the thing that sort of plagued Mac Brown towards the end of his tenure, really. Once Colt McCoy was gone after that BCS title game with the injury, he basically said that we don't want it to be the case that we go, that the entire offense goes as our quarterback goes. We want to be able to execute on offense and move the ball regardless of whether or not the quarterback is having a great game. And that has basically never happened since Colt McCoy left. And since Mac Brown tried to make that change, it continues to be the case that this offense is entirely dependent on how good their quarterback is. And that's true for a lot of college teams. That's not necessarily a bad thing. The vast majority of college teams fall into that category where their offense is not going to survive a bad game from their quarterback. If their quarterback is turning the ball over, if he is throwing like 45% completion percentage, then yeah, the offense is going to struggle for the, out of the 130 FBS teams, that's going to be the case for probably 120, if not 125 of them. There are very few teams built currently to be able to sustain their production despite who's under center. And that's probably the only one that I'm sure of right off the bat is Alabama, because we've seen it without Tua, and they can still move the ball pretty well. Not necessarily as great as they'd like to, but still extremely well. I imagine Ohio State would be able to do the same. I imagine if it really came to it, Jalen Hurts could be replaced at Oklahoma, and that offense is still going to run. I think there was a certain degree to which Texas fans had come under this expectation that this offense is capable of helping itself enough to where we don't need Sam to throw for 275 yards, never turn the ball over, throw for 3 touchdowns, and run for another one, to that he was not the entire offense in a lot of Texas fans' minds. Though he was the key to it, he wasn't the entire thing. And I think this game really showed that he is still basically the entirety of our offense being able to thrive.
Our team isn't good enough to overcome a poor performance. So do you want to go ahead and just transition into some of those more general thoughts? Because I kind of have a segue here.
Yeah, it's going to happen. So we're there.
I think that the biggest area of regression that we've seen on this team, I mean, obviously the defense, but beyond the defense, I think that the biggest regression is that this team doesn't play complementary football. And Herman talked about that a lot last year, that it's all about just, even if you don't have great performances, just at the right moments, the right guys are making plays, you know. And so last year we saw that the defense will get clutch stops or the offense will get clutch touchdowns when the defense failed. Or, you know, if Sam didn't have his best game, somebody else would step up. And that's not the case this year. I can't really think of anywhere that we've seen that so far. You know, like last year, whenever our defense was injured, like the Tech and the Oklahoma State games, and I guess even West Virginia, the offense stepped up, and I realized that we lost two of those games. Like, as I'm saying it, I know that we lost two of those games. But, like, the offense stepped up and played their best when the defense needed it. And that's not really anything that we're seeing this year. We don't have a guy like little Jordan Humphrey that is just winning games. Like, he's not, we don't have anybody making that game-winning catch against Tech or, like, that big or the long touchdown that he had against USC to really bring us back into the game. And it's I don't know how you get that back, and I think it's a little bit concerning that we lost it in just, like, 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, that basically pretty well sums up the most difficult part with this offense.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Twitter. I mean, I'm stealing this pretty blatantly, and I wish that I knew who it was, but it's like the Texas defense can't get a stop when they need to, and the Texas offense only scores when they need to. And outside, I mean, the last 4 weeks, that's basically been the case. The second period in between the two byes, that's basically been the story of that series, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was not really the case for that first period, like you said. With it being a problem in the second period, we more or less, outside of basically the last half or the latter part of the second quarter, or really the entire first half against LSU, but for that four pack of games to open it, we scored whenever we felt like scoring. It took a weird turn of events for us to not be able to score. The entire Louisiana Tech game, we just walked through them. The entire second half against LSU was basically scoring at will. Scored at will against Rice up until Sam got pulled, like early fourth quarter. And then Oklahoma State, for all the problems the defense had, the offense didn't really struggle there either.
Yeah, and we had two less possessions because we fumbled the punts.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where we came out of the bye week not being able to do that anymore. So I'm kind of hoping that if the bye week fucked us, the only thing that can unfuck us out of this bye week funk is yet another bye week. And it's hopefully one of those a negative times a negative equals a positive thing. And we'll get our shit straight for the back half of this schedule, or the final third of this schedule. Because even with two conference losses, chances are extremely high that if we win out, just given who is still ahead of us, we are still going to have a shot at going to the Big 12 title game. Things will get a little weird if Baylor manages to beat Oklahoma and then we get stuck in a tiebreaker with OU. But, I mean, two losses can get you into the Big 12 title game.
We did last year, right?
And it's what, yeah, it's exactly what we did last year. We
had three.
Had the loss to Maryland.
Wait, yeah, we had three. Because Oklahoma State, West Virginia, or do we have two?
And then Oklahoma again in the Big 12 title game.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Okay. But we got into the Big 12 title game with two. So you can get there with two. We have to win out. It's going to take some help. And it basically forces us to root for OU for part of that. Otherwise, because if they only lose one more game, chances are, of the teams that are left, it's going to be either Oklahoma State or Oklahoma. Well, they actually have quite a few, and their final few weeks here, OU has games that they can lose. They can lose to Oklahoma State. They can lose to Baylor. They can lose to Iowa State. And we can lose to all those teams, too, basically, in the last part of the schedule. But if we execute, if we can find a way, if we can find the offense that we had in the first part of this season and get some of those guys back from injury who have been absent for this second part of the season, we could possibly do enough to win those four games, and at that point, I would say it would be pretty likely that we're still going to Dallas to play for the Big 12 title.
Yeah. Yeah, Baylor is kind of lucky that they get us and OU both at home, but I still kind of, I mean, I would take OU in that right now. So, yeah, we'll have our shot. So let's go ahead and rewind a bit. I think that we're kind of done with the offense. Is there anything else you really want to say there?
No, I mean, because it's, for all the issues that the offense had in this game and has had in this like you said, this second period of the season. For the majority of this season, they have not been, and even still in the second part here, they have not been the limiting factor outside of the Oklahoma game. They have not been the reason that, or basically, they have not been the ones setting the ceiling for this team. It has been the defense, so I think it's only natural to really focus our frustration with the defense, as we have since basically, I think, the Oklahoma State game, and to a certain degree, even the earlier games, but especially in that Oklahoma State game, the defense has been under fire a lot, especially in the secondary.
Yeah. Yeah. The last thing I'll say on the offense is I think the biggest issue right now is just that Herman has gotten figured out a little bit. I don't think it's wrong to have basic schemes and to do simple things and trust yourself to do them well. But I do think you need more than just that. So I think Herman will get it figured out. If not by this season, I think next year will be fine, you know. But yeah, I just think that it's a case of, like, he's been here 3 years and people are starting to catch on. But I fully expect a guy like Herman to adjust, because I still think he's a really good offensive coach. But so move on to the defense. I want to start just by rewinding a bit and going back and talking about what our expectations were before the season, because I think that that'll set a good baseline to judge everything we've seen since then.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the two things that have been consistent with what I expected at the start of the season were that the offense was going to be better. Outside of Sam's meltdown here against TCU, I would say, by and large, the offense has been better. The running game continues to be unimpressive, but still less unimpressive than it was last year. Our receivers feel more dangerous. Our quarterback, again, up until this TCU game, felt more in control of his passing, still struggling with the deep ball. But overall, our offense was much scarier. It was more of a threat. It has been more of a threat, as most of us expected it would be.
We have 50-yard plays.
Yeah, we have 50-yard plays this year. That alone says it all, really, I think, as far as the explosiveness of this offense, while still needs a lot of work, is better than it was last year. And on the other side of it, while there were Texas fans who were expecting just better things, like we were going to have addition by subtraction with this defense, I feel like I was one of the people who was trying to caution that there is a balance to that. Like, there are instances where you can have addition by subtraction if it's only one player. Like, if we only lost Brecken Hager last year off of this defense, I would say, yeah, he might have been a senior, but I feel like a sophomore Joseph Osai or something like that can have a better impact in the game, just because of the raw talent difference being so massive. But with how many guys we were replacing, both starting corners, our starting nickelback, both of our starting linebackers, our entire starting defensive line, all of those positions all were turning over, and it was going to be a bunch of youth even before all these injuries hit us. So the expectation for me personally was that the defense, we would be lucky if the defense was as good as they were last year, and they were not great last year. They were bad last year. So I kind of knew this was coming, but it continues to be a source of frustration seeing the problems not be because they're inexperienced and they don't know how to time getting their head around, or they're missing some assignments here or there. It's basic fundamental stuff like tackling a guy in the open field. There are a ton of times where it's, We might not have stopped the pass, but we can stop the guy from advancing the ball another 25 yards. And we're failing to execute that, which is not so much an issue of experience, but just an issue of just basic fundamentals.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that my expectations were, honestly, I thought our defense would be pretty similar to last year. I thought it might be down a little bit statistically in terms of like an overall ranking. But I thought that last year we saw our defense have some really good games and some really bad games, and that this year would be pretty similar, where we had some like nice moments where we showed our like youth and athleticism, because that was like, it's definitely better this year. But I also thought we would have some moments where that got exposed, you know. So we saw Jameson with that like amazing interception. That's just something nobody else on the team could do last year. And then this year you also see some of that youth with issues like I mean, Tyler Olin is playing his first game and giving up two, like, deep passes, including the basically the game-sealing throw.
And admittedly, that one was one of those ones, like I talked about last week, where we just have this really high percentage of, haha, holy fuck, that quarterback is making a terrible deep throw off his back foot. Oh, holy fuck, how did the receiver end up with that ball?
Yeah, and I mean, that it's also like, if you're playing a true freshman, like third string safety, that's kind of that's kind of like what's going to happen sometimes. And I think that also kind of talks about my next point. So take whatever your expectation was, like anybody, like you, listeners, myself, take that expectation and then realize that going into the season, we had seven guys on defense in the secondary that we really thought we could trust, right? So we had one corner spot with Jalen Green, and then we had six safeties that we thought we could trust with Brandon Jones, Caden Stearns, B.J. Foster, Chris Brown.
Overshown.
And then if I tell you that six of those seven are going to miss time this year with injury, like whatever your expectations were, that's going to be a significant hit to them, right? So I think that the defense is, I don't know, like people are on top of Todd Orlando, and I am too, because there have been tons of frustrating issues with scheme, but this defense was always going to be bad this year, once you account for the injuries. Like that's just kind of the fact of the matter of the reality that we're facing.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that the injuries do play a role, but I think this is not not an instance where a good defense is ravaged by injuries and ends up looking like a bad defense as a result. It is a bad defense being ravaged by injuries to look like one of the worst defenses in the country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and none of that's an excuse for being like the worst tackling team in the country or having all these delayed blitzes or playing Osai out of position. Like, all that is absolutely still valid and something that we should be mad about, you know, and something that is frustrating for fans. But the defense being poor is just kind of the way that it was going to have to be this year.
Yeah. If you were not expecting the defense to be an issue in several games this year, not to this level, but if you weren't expecting it to be a problem, if you were truly expecting it to be significantly better than it was last year, your expectations are sort of your own punishment for what we get out of this defense. Is your expectations were out of line, but again, that's still does not excuse the fact that this defense is in a bad place. But that reaction that we have from most of the fan base, I feel like, is rooted in that getting too caught up drinking the Kool-Aid about the raw talent that these guys have, especially with the secondary class that we brought in as part of the 2018 recruiting class. A lot of people got so caught up in just thinking about talent and how it apparently in their minds was so much more important than the experience that we lost, that you had a lot of people who had deluded themselves into thinking that everything was just going to be way better than it was, when that would have been a miraculous thing to pull off this season.
Yeah. Yeah, so overall, I think that if I'm like assigning blame or whatever for this defense, I think that like 33% of the blame is just, I don't know the best way to put this, but I think that like 33% of whatever blame I'm assigning could like just already be accounted for at the beginning of the season. So stuff like youth or problems with, like, there was a lot of discussion over the offseason about how do we get our best 11 guys on the field, who are our best 11, and a lot of people said like 8 of those best 11 are going to be defensive backs. And now all of our defensive backs are, like, in the hospital. So 33% is going to go to injuries. 33% is going to go to, like, that general just issues that we knew about coming into the season. And then I think the last third could kind of go to Orlando. But I don't think that he is the only problem that we have this year.
No, it's not exclusively a coordinator problem. There are a lot of issues, I think, from, like, a position coach level on that defense.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a lot of those cornerbacks. We've talked about it a few times here, is that it's not like these guys are just getting straight up beat and they're not in the right spot. It's like they're in the right position and then just don't do the part where they turn their head around and put their hand where the ball is. They just forget to look back. They do the hard part of keeping up with the receiver and forget to actually defend the pass. They defend the player, but they don't defend the ball. Yeah. So it's all of these little fundamental things that are going to be a position coach thing. Todd Orlando is not exclusively to blame for tackling drills. Tackling drills are going to be something that's going to be coached up on a position coach level. So if it's just the linebackers who are having trouble making tackles, then yeah, it's going to fall on Todd Orlando because that he is the linebackers coach as well as the overall defensive coordinator. But basic fundamentals are not a coordinator level problem. That is a position coach level problem. Just about every position is having some glaring issues with that tackling. So not only then does it become a position coach issue, it's again still not a coordinator issue because coordinating is about scheme, not about fundamentals. It becomes a head coach issue because it's going to be that mantra, that focus that the head coach is putting on fundamentals on a daily basis during practice. If every unit of that defense is struggling with those fundamentals, that means we are not dedicating enough time as a like an administrative level for this football team, for the coaches. We are not dedicating enough of our time to practicing basic fundamentals. We are so focused on trying to install this ridiculously complex scheme for a bunch of extremely young players that it's that we've completely sacrificed our ability to make fundamental plays while at the same time also not understanding the scheme because we're now trying to juggle both things when at this point fundamentals should have been more than secure and it should have been all focusing on fully installing this defense. And it's an extremely frustrating thing. If you're Herman, it's even more frustrating for fans when you have to listen to his press conferences where he just gives these coach speak answers of we have to find a way to get better, and feeling like that ownership, at least publicly, is not being taken by the head coach for poor fundamentals from his football
right.
team.
Right. Yeah, and responsibility ultimately flows upward. That's just how things work or should work in life. So I kind of have the image that's in my mind right now is that there's all these issues on the defense, like not getting your backs turned and not tackling properly, and the Titanic is sinking. So then scheme is looked at as the lifeboats, but of course the Titanic had like a tenth of the lifeboats they need or whatever, so everybody just drowns. The defense just, there's no safety in the scheme for anybody, unfortunately, right now.
Yeah, and that's the issue when you don't have a significant chunk of senior leadership like you did last season. You don't have those lifeboats, basically, to fall back on. You can't say, all right, well, these talented players are struggling, so we're going to need to turn to their less physically talented but more steady seniors so we can say, hey, we know you're not going to be able to pull off these crazy things like the young kid could, but you're not going to play yourself out of position. We can rely on you at least to not do that and at least sort of tread water for a little while. But instead, you have what experience you do have getting knocked out of games with injuries. So you have young guys replacing young guys who already were still struggling with some of those things. And then they themselves are also getting knocked out of games with injuries. So you're basically continuously trying to backfill with youth when you're consistently just digging further and further into guys who are both less talented and do not have the experience you need to be able to shore up these parts until that more talented player comes back.
Yep. So, I mean, good luck, Tom. You got 2 weeks.
Yeah. Got 2 weeks to get this thing figured out before Kansas State comes to town. And thankfully, they're not going to be the high-flying offense. This is going to be an offense that is more in the vein of what we faced against Georgia. So hopefully that sort of slower, more deliberate pace out of Kansas State is something that plays well for us. I'm not going to cross my heart on that one. I'm not going to count on that because at this point, I feel like I need to have learned my lesson that I'm just going to get burned by this defense. But hopefully that sort of attack that Kansas State's going to come at us with is going to be something that's going to play a little bit better and be less painful for our secondary, but
yeah,
we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and I mean, we're getting a lot of guys back, like you said. I'm actually most excited to see Jordan Whittington back, hopefully. You know, I don't know, I just really want to see him play, and his loss is kind of also underrated, like I mentioned, Brew. If you have both of those guys, well, I think this offense could have been even better, or like more, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But yeah, I'm happy to have Jordan back. Hopefully. Yep.
Happy to have Jordan Knock back. Happy to have possibly Caden Stearns back as well. A lot of pieces will hopefully be back as a result of this bye week, giving him extra time to heal. This episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast on Hornscast is sponsored by Last Stand Hats, the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Last Stand Hats gives Texas fans the opportunity to showcase their burnt orange pride by providing apparel options outside the standard block T and Longhorn logos. If you're looking for more variety in your Longhorn gear, you have to check out laststandhats.com. And if you use the code HORNSCAST10 at checkout, you'll save 10% on your order. So make sure to wear your heart on your head and go to laststandhats.com. Hook 'em. Last week was a pretty brutal return to earth for the expectations for a lot of Texas fans, but the good news is next week is a bye week, so the Longhorns can't hurt you on Saturday. They can you can watch other college football games and just root against the teams you want to root against, but not have to worry about really getting burned by the team you love. But we'll be back next week anyway with our preview of the Kansas State Wildcats. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. And be sure to like, rate, comment, subscribe, whatever, on whichever podcast listening platform you're using to let us know how we're doing, as well as to keep up with our show and all the other great shows on Hornscast. Thank you once again to our sponsor for this episode, Last Stand Hats. Make sure to use that code HORNSCAST10. Save a little money on your purchase there. We will see you next week. Hook 'em.